Such considerations were not so abstract and academic as they seemed at first. In the early planning of wildfire, Stone had observed that 40% of all human disease was caused by microorganisms. Burton had countered by noting that only 3% of all microorganisms caused disease. Obviously, while much human misery was attributable to bacteria, the chances of any particular bacteria being dangerous to man were very small. This was because the process of adaptation of fitting man to bacteria was complex.
"Most bacteria," Burton once observed, "simply can't live within a man long enough to harm him. Conditions are one way or another unfavorable. The body is too hot or too cold, too acid or too alkaline, or there's just too much oxygen or not enough. Man's body is as hostile as Antarctica to most bacteria."
Burton already knew something about transmission and something about the mechanism of death. Clotting of the blood. The question remained, how did the organism get into the body? He knew that the organism killed by clotting blood. Very likely it would initiate clotting at the point of entrance into the body. If skin, clotting would start near the surface. If lungs, it would begin in the chest, radiating outward. This was something he could test. By using radioactively tagged blood proteins, and then following his animals with scintillometer scans, he could determine where in the body the blood first clotted. The scanner would print out its results on a series of block outlines on which were patterns of dots in the shape of a human body. He set the computer printing program and then exposed a rhesus monkey to air containing the lethal microorganism. Immediately, the printout began to clatter out from the computer. The graphic printout told him what he needed to know, that clotting began in the lungs and spread outward through the rest of the body. But there was an additional piece of information gained. Burton later said,
"It seemed impossible to me that death could occur in 3 seconds, but it seemed even more unlikely that the total blood volume of the body, 5 quarts, could solidify in so short a period. I was curious to know whether a single crucial clot might form in the brain, perhaps, and that the rest of the body clot at a slower pace."
Burton was thinking of the brain, even at this early stage of his investigation. In retrospect, it is frustrating that he did not follow this line of inquiry to its logical conclusion. He was prevented from doing this by the evidence of the scans, which told him that clotting began in the lungs and progressed up the carotid arteries to the brain 1 or 2 seconds later. So Burton lost immediate interest in the brain. His mistake was compounded by his next experiment. It was a simple test, not part of the regular wildfire protocol. Burton knew that death coincided with blood clotting. If clotting could be prevented, could death be avoided? He took several rats and injected them with heparin, an anticoagulating drug preventing blood clot formation. Then he exposed the rats to air containing the lethal organism. The first rat with a low dose died in 5 seconds. The others followed within a minute. A single rat with a massive dose lived nearly 3 minutes, but he also succumbed in the end. Burton was depressed by the results. Although death was delayed, it was not prevented. The method of symptomatic treatment did not work. He put the dead rats to one side, then made his crucial mistake. Burton did not autopsy the anticoagulated rats. Instead, he turned his attention to the original autopsy specimens, the first black Norway rat and the first rhesus monkey to be exposed to the capsule. To gross inspection, the animals had died of total intravascular coagulation. The arteries, the heart, lungs, kidneys, liver, and spleen, all the blood-containing organs were rock-hard solid. This was what he had expected. Burton shook his head. Anticoagulants might not work, but the fact was that something stopped the process. There was a way that it could be done. He knew that, because 2 people had survived.